Hold on, folks. I have a great song for you. If I can make it happen, and I hope so. Let's see. This is Carol with Arts Live and Local, hopefully, and got a great show lined up for you, and including.
They're picking up people, taking them away. Another one disappeared each and every day. Each and every damn day. Well, they're dressed up like thugs in unmarked vans. If you fit a description, these boys I got plans. Now they got terrible plans to whisk you away to a far off land. Away from your lawyers, just as far as they can. Due process be damned. Well, my friend Jose's skin is brown, and I fear for him when he walks around town, as he strolls about town. But he was born in the USA. But is that enough to keep these goons at bay? Well, who can say? So I'm a-singing, hey, hey, I'm talking to you. If they can take him, what else can they do? Hey, hey, you know it's true. Cause if they take Jose, they can surely take you. History don't repeat, but it sure do rhyme. So mark my words, it's a matter of time. It's a matter of time. This all ends so badly, and we've seen it before. It can be worse, much worse, and so much more. Well, so much more. So don't just stand there and stare at your shoes. Generations will ask, what did you do? What the hell did you do?
Well, you have a chance to do something right now. If you're anywhere near Seaside, Oregon, Indivisible North Coast Rally is 3 to 4 today at the highway, not Seaside, Warrenton, the highway 101 and Ensign Lane by Home Depot in Warrenton. iceoutforgood.org for more information.
They can take anybody up off the street. They can take you.
That's Mark Rubin. Yeah. Woo. And now Mark wants to make more music. But we're not going to let him. That was Dispatch's Songs from a World Gone Mad. And the song was Goon with a Hammer. And I'm very fortunate here. People send me their music when they hope that we can share with the world. And KMUN does just that when we can. So, as I mentioned, Carol here with Arts Live and Local. And whew, what a time we're in. I think Mark said a lot of it, so I will just encourage folks to stay tuned, stay aware, stay awake, and take care of yourself and your neighbors and the world, because we're all in this together. Sudan, Somalia, Venezuela, Greenland, Palestine, Israel, Ukraine, Russia, Haiti, so many more. Oh, did I mention the United States? Big time. Healing for local friends, Noel, and Luann and Hope, Lisa, Janet, Karen, Gina, Reva and Kate, Jenny and Marietta, Mary Beth, Peter Hutala, Jean and Carl, Tom, you and me and all of us, because I am sure we are all in need of healing. And we can take care of each other. That's what we do on this show. First, we celebrate birthdays. Anasuya and Edie Hussa, Marco, Sharon, and Amy. And you, if you have a birthday in the next 364 days, not years, maybe, who knows? I just came from my Buddhist class. Well, my show today is one of those organic comes together kind of thing. So first, I will introduce, many of you know, Julie Brown, Clatsop Community College English instructor. That's Dr. Julie Brown for the record, but we just call her Julie. Hi, Julie.
Hi, Carol. So good to be here.
You bet. I love your T-shirt, French truck.
It's from coffee. New Orleans.
New Orleans, of course. Well, Julie is, in addition to being an instructor, she's also an author, writer, and she just sort of appears all over the place every now and then, and I never know what she's going to pull out of the hat. So this time I read about the Salty Brotherhood of American Whalers. And it's happening February 5th, 7 p.m., at the Lovell Tap Room. That's part of the...
The Lovell Showroom, right, which is part of Fort George.
Okay, I thought I read that it was being switched to the tap room.
Actually, you're right, yeah, because there's going to be video games in the showroom.
Well,
yeah,
we do.
We do both, yeah.
we have our priorities, don't we? Don't. You know, before, I'll announce this a little bit later. The Salty Brotherhood of American Whalers. I have my own personal opinions about whaling. I think... they'd be pretty obvious to anyone who's ever listened to me talk or seen me around at various vigils, etc. But Julie and I talked about this, and it sounds like a piece of humanity that is worth pointing out. And I'm going to ask you, Julie, to tell us. And start off with when and where and what took you to be studying American whalers, considering what else you have in your pack. What do you do? Just suddenly wake up in the morning and say, I had a dream, or what? How do you get to these different
Thanks,
issues?
Carol. This fall, I was invited to come to Thoreau's cabin in Concord, Massachusetts.
Wow.
To talk about Thoreau as a man on the spectrum, mm-hmm. who wrote wonderful books like Walden. And while I was there, I thought, Mystic Connecticut is just... For us, as we look at it, just a short way down the road. And I've always wanted to see the Seaport Museum that they have there. It's fantastic recreation of a seaport town and wonderful museum and exhibit. So I went there, and their special exhibit was all about American whaling.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, a lot of it was about the equipment and the ships and a lot of statistical information about whales and so on. But what fascinated me were the photographs of the whalers, that there wasn't just one face. It was a multitude of different kinds of faces of men from a wide variety of countries and cultures and ethnicities and states. Not what you picture when you see Gregory Peck playing Ahab in Moby Dick. You know, it was something different. And so once my curiosity is aroused, I immediately go to the library and order as many books as I can find. Mm-hmm. And so I've been reading a lot of books about African-American whalers and Native American whalers, because I didn't really picture either of those two groups working on whaling ships in the 1830s out of Nantucket, Massachusetts, but they were everywhere.
So whose ships were there? Great corporations that owned the ships and they just grabbed anybody they could? Or how did that?
Most of the whaling ships back then in New England were owned by kind of like how we have mutual funds today. A number of investors would come together and invest in a ship. It was rarely one person, but a number of, you know, five or six men would invest in a ship together and share the profits. A large number of them were from Massachusetts, from New England, New York. They were white, middle, upper class, and a lot of them were Quakers.
Oh.
Which is a little surprising. A lot of them were Quakers.
Any explanation for that, or just...
Well, that was kind of the time and place of Nantucket. Nantucket was a Quaker community, and that they were situated right in the middle of the whaling areas, so it was kind of a coincidence in a way. Mm-hmm. It's not always that easy to find the labor that they needed, so sometimes, in addition to the young white men from Nantucket, they would take on Native Americans or African Americans who were not slaves to work on the ships. And the surprising thing about it, from my perspective, is those different groups were paid exactly the same as the whites and treated the same as the whites, unlike other industries where they were paid less and treated mm-hmm. poorly.
Mm-hmm. Of course, they were probably all paid very little.
That's true. Half of nothing is nothing. But,
well, having talked to Carl Marlantis last week about the logging industry and Naysale and everywhere else, and reading that book,
I'm
really understanding. So were they mostly people, indigenous people and African Americans who lived in the area to begin with?
The natives were. There is an Indian population on Nantucket, and there were several communities in Massachusetts of Native Americans. And there was a stereotypical assumption at that time that Native Americans would be good at throwing a harpoon because of the way that they hunted their food. And so they were almost always brought on board as harpooners, whether or not they could throw, you know, but that was the assumption that was made of them. Mm-hmm. The good thing about being a harpooner is you are in line for advancement. So you can, over time, become third mate, second mate, and captain. And quite a few of them made it up to the ranks and became captain of a ship.
Wow.
Now, the black workers, a lot of them were emancipated slaves or runaway slaves who had made their way up in the Underground Railroad and were delighted to find that they could get work, honest work, where they were being paid the same as mm-hmm. the whites. But the cultural stereotype for that time assigned mm-hmm. them usually to being cooks or stewards mm-hmm. because they were considered to be of a servant mentality mm-hmm. and class. And unfortunately, those positions, so you're serving the men, the mm-hmm. white men, their food and cooking for them, but those positions are usually not in line for advancement, so it was more rare for them to become third mate, second mate, and so on. It was a lot harder for them because of that stereotype.
Right. So how did all these folks get along?
Yeah, that's the best question. If you look at the crew lists from those whaling vessels, and you can find these online through a lot of museums, it's fascinating to see that one ship might have someone from China, someone from India, someone mm-hmm. from Portugal, someone from England, Ireland, Germany, France, Polynesia, Fiji, Hawaii, different Native American tribes, several different American states, and they didn't even necessarily all speak English, mm-hmm. and they were all coming from a different background, which would mean their religion, their culture, their
food,
way of doing
too.
Things, their food, yeah. exactly, their yeah. language, mm-hmm. all of those things were different. So it's a little bit like the Tower of Babel. You've got to figure out, how are we all going to get along? Anybody that works on a ship knows that getting along is one of the most important values of working on a ship, because if you don't get along and your crew is at each other's throats, it's not going to be a successful voyage, and it can be very dangerous.
Right.
So
right.
Over time, the crews developed their own culture unique to working on a ship that became their culture away from home, and they embraced it as a way of becoming part of a brotherhood with the other men who worked on the ships.
And that's where the title of your talk comes from. I heard that word, brotherhood. I said, wait a minute. The Salty Brotherhood of American Whalers. How long, is there any kind of ballpark figure how long people would keep working on one of these ships?
It was one or the other. They either couldn't handle it and they quit right away, or a lot of them stayed with it for life. It was not only a way to make a living, although they were not paid very well, but you had your lodging, you had your food, you had, you know, transportation to different places in the world that you might want to see. You had a family on the ship if you didn't have one back home.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, you mean a family? This brotherhood.
A family of brothers on the ship, although the captains...
No women on the ship.
Well, the captains sometimes brought their wives and children. Some did and some didn't. Mm-hmm. But that would have been the only woman aboard a whaling ship.
Right. And the folks you mentioned who came from all over the world, would they just happen to be in the neighborhood or heard about?
Right. Well, some of them were immigrants, came to the United States and found that kind of labor. Some of them were picked up on different ports along the way.
Uh-huh.
So an American whaling ship might stop in the Azores for fresh water, and they're down a crewman, and they pick up one, and he's Portuguese. And then they might be rounding Cape Horn, coming up the west coast of South America, and or off the coast of Brazil, they come for timber, they're shorthanded, they pick up a Brazilian whaler. So sometimes it happened like that, picking them up at different ports.
And you mentioned, but say again, when this was prominent.
I'm looking mostly at the 1830s, which was really when it was a booming enterprise. And it was actually pretty profitable until maybe the 1870s or 80s, when people started to turn to petroleum products as a way of providing lubricants, heating oil, and whaling oil was not as necessary after that.
So that was the major reason for hunting the whales?
Well,
what about the
mostly
whale blubber?
They would melt it down into oil, and then they would use it for heating, for light, for industry. They'd make candles out of it. Most of the old oil lamps that you see in antique shops and that were made for whale oil. It burned real clean, gave a nice light.
Did they decimate the population?
Yeah, I mean, they did, as we know. They really, really did a number, because as it's like any other natural resource industry, as the technology got better, consuming of resources became really out of control. The first whalers in America, of course, were the Native Americans, who would wait for a whale to come up on the beach or possibly go out on rare occasions to bring in one whale for the whole community that would last for a long time. But these whalers after 1830 were going out into the middle of the Pacific Ocean and killing, you know, 40, 50, 70, 80 whales. And instead of bringing back the whole whale, they would just cut them up and take the blubber home with them and toss the rest back into the sea.
Yeah, the waste
that
we still see very unfortunately. Do you have any specifics? You had mentioned, I read, common superstitions, tattoos, songs. Mention that, please.
Yeah. Here's an example of how the men who were not the officers, but the hands, the ordinary workers, used their own culture in a really clever way. You weren't allowed to criticize your captain or the leadership. Not heard of. You can't. And so they found a way to do that indirectly by telling ghost stories. So a lot of the ghost stories they told were things like, oh, a captain on a ship that I once heard of, not my captain, but one that I heard of, mistreated the men on his ship, and suddenly a hurricane came and sank the vessel. You know, things like that, that were a really understated way of letting the captain know, hey, you know, you got to treat us right.
Right. Yeah,
that would be one example. Nice. Another example might be related to weather and superstitions, because weather is extremely important if you're living on a ship, but it's completely out of your control. So the number of superstitions that they had about what people should or should not do, some of them we are still familiar to us today. For example, if you whistle on a ship, it brings up the wind.
Oh.
This was a new one to me, but Finnish people actually controlled the weather. Did you know that?
I can believe it. So if you had strong,
if you had a Finn on board, he could control the weather for you.
See.
Okay. And you mentioned the singing. And when I give my presentation February 5th, I'm really pleased to announce that Mary Ylipäätö,
Marianne Ylipäätö,
is going to come join me and with her guitar, and she's going to sing a whaling song and then teach all of us a sing-along song so that we can be part of the community of singing whaling songs.
That's great. Okay, let's just repeat that. You said February 5th, that's a Thursday. This is part of the every Thursday evening. There's a different group. The college is once a month. That's the one you're doing.
Ales and Ideas.
Ales and Ideas. Philosopharian is once a month, and I've got some new update on them. And several others. So check it out. If you're in town, just go over there and see. It starts at 7. They open, doors open at 6, so you can get a bite to eat or a beer or non-beer. And it's usually in the Level showroom.
Yeah.
But for Julie's talk, they're going to be right in the bowels of the
room. Among all the wooden casks, just like on a ship. I love it.
Just perfect. Well, Julie, thank you so much. This is February 7th, so you have a...
February 5th.
I'm sorry, February 5th.
At 7, huh?
Right. Read your notes, Carol. Okay. And thank
so
you so
much.
Carol.
Oh,
and
my pleasure.
Do keep
thank
us
you.
Posted for your next adventure.
Yeah, thanks so
I think
much.
Last time you were here, you were talking about your book about autism.
Yeah.
And and you teach what at the college?
Yes, I teach writing and literature at Clatsop Community College, but this spring I'm scheduled to teach two pretty fun classes. One of them is maritime culture, which is all about things like this, life at sea, and the other one is how to write children's books, which is also a fun class.
Oh, nice. Okay. Well, you'll have to send your students to KMUN for
Definitely
the bedtime
will.
Story program.
The bedtime story.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank
okay.
You
thanks so much, Carol.
Dr.
Have a great
Julie
day.
Brown of Clatsop College. And stay tuned. We've got some more exciting guests here at KMUN, Astoria, KTCB, Tillamook, and some music from Venezuela. A song from an album, Vamos a darle Huracán de Fuego. It's called Rebellion. In English, don't beat the woman. And this story took place in the 1600s when the tyrant ruled the streets of Cartagena. The Spanish arrived and the Africans in chains and in their land imposed a lifetime of slavery upon them. An African man and wife who were enslaved to a Spaniard who treated them badly and beat the wife. The handsome black man rebelled to take revenge for his love. And you can still hear him on the bonfire screaming, "Don't beat my wife." Lands of Venezuela and Colombia. When did I say that was? Where are we now? That was in the 1600s. My Lord, do we ever learn? Well, I have two dear friends with me here. Browns, we've got three Brownsmead women in the room right now, folks. Watch out. And they are here to tell you about a very exciting documentary that is coming to town tomorrow. And with me is Hillary Levine and Billy Delano.
Delaney.
I know. I got that. I switched from, we're doing Spanish, so I made you Spanish, Delano.
Por supuesto.
Actually, you'll see Billy, I think, probably this year, as she is usually at Fisher Poets. She's a heavy-duty Fisher in Alaska and wherever else she happens to be. But today, she's here in the studio, and Hillary and Billy are going to tell us about Up on the Mountain, an award-winning documentary. And I've got some notes, but instead I'd like to just turn it over to you. Tell us, what is this film? Why are you bringing it? And by the way, folks, I mentioned organic. I felt that the scene that they're speaking about and the scene that Julie Brown was just speaking about, there is some coincidental? Not really. There are some human aspects there, and there are some tragic aspects as well. So, tell us, and why you're bringing it here.
Of course. Thank you so much for having us, first of all, Carol. And I'm sorry to be the one here speaking about the film. We're on here promoting a fundraiser that's going to be tomorrow night at 7 p.m. at the Columbian Theater. The tickets are going to be $10 to $45. We're implementing a sliding scale so people feel like they can access it. No one's going to be turned away for lack of funds. But if you want to give more generously, 100% of the proceeds, the ticket sales for this event, are going to be going to Consejo Hispano. And Hillary's definitely going to speak more to the work that Consejo does in this community and how important it is to be creating sustainable pathways for funding community support that is needed.
Always, but especially right now.
And consistently. I think the consistency is what makes these urgent moments possible to address, is supporting the people who are deeply entrenched in the work.
Always.
Yes. Who have built the networks.
Yes, I agree.
And the stability.
Instead of waiting for Christmas to feed people. Let's feed people all the time.
But so, we're also a bunch of Jews in this room, so I'm not sure why you made that.
I forgot about that.
Tzedakah all year long, yes.
Just to describe the event a little bit more, both of the filmmakers will be here for the screening tomorrow evening, and it's a feature-length documentary that's won a ton of awards, not just in the U.S. Both of the filmmakers are former Astoria residents and commercial fishermen and commercial mushroom pickers.
Okay.
And they're going to be sticking around after the film to do a Q&A with the executive director of Consejo Hispano, Jenny Poole Radway, after. And I'm just really looking forward to seeing what comes out as far as community dialogue around the event.
So how did you – so you knew these – if they were former Astoria and fishing, you knew them. Is that how you found out about the film to begin with?
I have longstanding friendships with both of the filmmakers, actually, for a long time. One of my close friends, Mike Reese, who recently had to move away from Astoria with his family, was also the president of the board of directors for the Astoria Warming Center for a number of years.
Oh, wow.
And did work in the community, and they got priced out of town. Big surprise.
So, were they trained? Because I saw the trailer, and it's just amazing. Are they professional filmmakers, or how is this?
Well, I mean, I think they can speak more to that tomorrow evening. I'm not going to get it completely right. But this is the first film that either of them ever made. They filmed over, I believe it took them around a decade to bring this film into being. They were teaching themselves all of the skills and editing required, and filming over many seasons of participating in the commercial mushroom industry. And it's, I think they described the way it would be described as an observational documentary, meaning they followed participants in what was happening in their lives in the seasons. And there is no narration, there is no plot, but it's following the forestry workers that they were working with, and just a real snapshot into what their lives look like.
And who are these mushroom pickers?
Well, I think I can speak a bit more to that, and then segue into like why I thought that it would be such a good pairing with this fundraiser. I think, you know, I mentioned commercial fishing. Obviously, we're in Astoria, Oregon. It's a fishing town. I love this film because it really captures like beauty that a lot of people who live in this place can appreciate of working on the land, with the land. These are forestry workers who are often not given the recognition of being equals to other forestry workers. And like the commercial fishing industry, it is largely supported by immigrant labor,
of course,
as anyone working in either of those two industries knows. So much of what makes our lifestyle possible involves a rich network of immigrant community.
Well, again, and I mentioned this with Julie last week, Carl Marlantis was on with his book Deep River about the Finnish immigrants and logging.
Yeah.
And same thing, same what you just said, and the challenges and the
An aspect of the film, and I think a lot of the inspiration for them making it, was to just shine light on the working conditions of the people who are doing this work that largely goes unseen, unnoticed. And a lot of what came to light in the observational documentary involved how the Forest Service, which is the federal agency, was managing access to the public forests. And one of the aspects that came up in the film was the Forest Service working with ICE, working with ICE, around enforcement and federal agencies that are, you know, cooperating with that agency. And it's a very subtle piece. I'm really looking forward to having this film in our community.
Well, the contrast, too, because it is a gorgeous film, too.
Beautiful.
The footage is just beautiful to watch. And you also, I hadn't realized that it's are you saying without any words?
They're not narrating the film. They're not like creating a plot or a subtext. Okay. So there's lots of speaking in the film,
it's
just following the subjects who are being who are
and
part of the documentary.
And the are they men mostly or families or?
I think a lot of the people who are in the film, there's like a lot of transient industries. There are a lot of men, but it's families.
Yes.
It's, yeah. I think some of the prominently featured like groups that they're following mm-hmm. are Southeast Asian refugees, mm-hmm. Working white Americans, Central American immigrants. It's a very diverse field mm-hmm. and very insular. And mm-hmm. I think you see a lot of the community that emerges as far as mutual aid and people taking care right. of each other
and
in that place.
That's where I've realized the parallel lines mm-hmm. with these whalers from 1830s. Mm-hmm. The big difference is the incredible challenges.
Yeah.
That and this is when this is a new film, isn't it?
It's relatively been some years that since it's come a couple of years since
couple.
It's come
yeah.
out, but
yeah.
it's
but
fairly
not
new.
The 1830s, right?
Not the 1830s. No.
No. It's a modern day, and that's where mm-hmm. we, the people, who are still here, knowing this mm-hmm. is how. People are treated. The mushrooms that are picked, my understanding, harvesting these wild mushrooms, go out to the world.
Fancy to the finest restaurants yeah. in the yeah. world.
Yeah.
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 yeah. Like seafood. Yeah. It's another thing yeah. that's like a really high quality product. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I think just that you said it came out not too long ago, a couple mm-hmm. of years ago, in so many people's minds. The urgency of defending like our immigrant community members is current and has only existed this year, and that's not the truth.
Right.
And a big part of that is why I think this is maybe like a good pairing with mm-hmm. supporting the work that Consejo Hispano
right.
does in our community. Maybe Hillary
so let's turn it over to Hillary.
Yeah. yeah.
Tell us about Consejo Hispano.
Sure. Yeah. I'm not, you know, an official representative of right. Consejo. I have been privileged to get to volunteer with them mm-hmm. over the last year. And I will say that Billy said it really eloquently. I think a lot of us who are allies, I am a white woman. My immigrant experience is many generations past. Mm-hmm. You know, are trying to meet the moment right now, and we're wanting to see the sense of urgency and create mutual aid and, you know, throw resources and money at things that we can. And we just wanted to really let folks get to know Consejo Hispano, know that they've been in the community, run by the Latine community, meeting their needs for years. And we would really hope that folks would try to find a way to consistently support them. As Billy said, you know, a lot of folks have it on their mind right now, but the type of work that they do is generational. You know, they do economic justice work and try to you know, undo some of the just disparities that we see in terms of access for folks who are immigrants. And they have a team that is dedicated to creating like a deep bench of knowledge and systems and services for their community. And I would say one of the things that I love about Consejo is that they also celebrate. They celebrate what the immigrant community brings to our community.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, folks are so much bigger than their resilience and so much bigger than who they are in crisis. And I think that we should, if we are allies who are hoping to let the immigrant community in this time and moment know that we support them, let's keep doing it. And let's, you know, value their contributions, the culture they bring, the contributions to our community that they bring all of the time. So our hope is that folks will come for the movie, fall in love with Consejo, and keep supporting them, you know, on and on again past this one night.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And we don't, I let Billy slip by, but we don't give prices on the air. However, just know that this is a benefit, and if you can be generous, wonderful. If you can't, please come anyway and meet the situation, the people, and also appreciate this gorgeous film.
Yeah.
The name of the film is Up on the Mountain. You can look it up. Award-winning film, and come, we didn't mention, it's at the Columbian Theater.
That's, and thank you so much to the Columbian for hosting
yes,
this
Yes, absolutely.
Event.
Yes, thank you. That's on the corner of 11th and Marine Drive, that Columbian Theater, yes. And it's tomorrow evening, the 24th of January, from 7 to 9. Of course, come a little early. Get your favorite seat. I don't know if the upstairs is going to be open. We'll find out. But come and join and share in this community. Thank you so much,
Thank Billy you for having us,
Delaney
Carol.
And Hillary Levine.
Thank you so much.
Viva Brownsmead.
Right. And I have some more music for you. This is from Simon Lynch, who is actually from Greenland, but he was here in Astoria. Thank you, Scott Dougherty, who had red hair music and used to bring us all this fabulous music for years. Well, not for years. I think it was a couple of years, but it was every weekend, twice a weekend. Before I go there, I do want to let you know that since we're in the art world, starting this Monday evening, Monday morning from 10 to noon, that's January 26th, philosophians are on the move again. The Aesthetics for Art Type People. And this is part two, Philosophical Traditions in Aesthetics. Chinese, Japanese, Indian, Greek, early modern, postmodern, Chinese philosophical aesthetics. It's sponsored by Cambium Gallery. That's 1010 Duane. They are just east of 10th and Duane. And the it will be taking place upstairs, but you enter through Cambium. Everybody is welcome. No registration required, no fee, and you can go. You don't have to go every week, so check it out. 10 to noon this Monday morning, and then come on back. Stay tuned for music from Simon Lynch, and then music from Barbara Ann, right here on KMUN.
Could see what I see now. Put this picture in a frame. My kaleidoscope of dreams. Nothing ever stays the same. Mm-mm. Picture postcards of my day. Wash of colors fill my cup. As I drink the wine of life, once in motion, hard to stop. Mm-mm. Catch my life in a bird's eye view, and you'll see. That's what keeps me from you. Mm-mm-mm. New horizons turn my head. Open sky and open road. Friendships made along the way. Flowers of the seeds I've sown. Seems unkind. could see what I see now. Put this picture in a frame. My kaleidoscope of dreams. Nothing ever stays the same. Catch my life in a bird's eye view, and you see you.
Are listening to Simon Lynch. That's L-Y-N-G-E. Album is a beautiful way to drown. Don't do that, though. I just wanted to give you this quickie. Simon wrote, when I was 16, I moved away from my home, Denmark, and back to Greenland to be with my father and reconnect with my native Greenlandic roots. Just in case you were thinking, according to certain people, that Greenland is just a mess of nobodies. Okay, just wanted to get that straight. I started working at the local supermarket at Quackertalk as a delivery boy and by chance became friends with a convicted killer and mafia boss who worked there as well. And here's an interesting fact. We have open prisons in Greenland because it's really hard to run away since there are no roads or anything. He was a nice guy and he taught me how to be tough and stand up for myself. But more importantly, I found out that you can't judge people until you've gotten to know them. Okay. And Simon. Thank you, Simon. It's been years, but it was great having him here. Thanks, Scott Dougherty, for bringing him here. And now, thanks to Barbara Ann Gaidach, who you all know because she's one of my regulars. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, Carol.
And with her is Connie Hunt.
Hi. Hi, Connie.
Is this your first time on?
Yes, it is.
On the radio also?
Oh, I've been on the radio before, okay. But not here with
not
you.
Not this?
No, but...
Have you been on KMUN?
Yes, I was, okay. Many years ago.
Okay. With, yep. So Connie is a single virgin. Barbara Ann, no way. She's been here so many times. So I'm glad you're both here. They have a very exciting event for us folkies. That includes me. The inaugural North Coast Folk Festival is coming right here to our community. So take it away.
Okay, Carol, this was my vision a year ago, and I think when you and I first met several years ago,
yep.
It's not a vision anymore. It's going to be May 1st, 2nd, and 3rd of this 2026. I always wanted to have something like that here. It's like Sisters Folk Festival by band, Spokane Folk Festival, but we're having our own. Why? Because I love the community. Secondly, it's going to help the community. The music is wonderful. A lot of our own local musicians here in Long Beach, and I have from Portland folk area and also Washington.
And I should say, because Barbara Ann didn't, but she's been a professional folk musician for 100 years. Well, maybe half that, but seriously, starting a long time ago, working her way through various country, etc., but playing, and then picked it right up again, and
I
now
did.
You're mm-hmm. playing all over town.
All over, yes,
just
I am.
Just watch for her name. Oregon folk singer.
And I want to thank Carol, who initially found me. I was playing at Klatskanine at the
Garlic Festival. Thing.
Yeah, and she was out there, and I didn't know who she was, and she came up and said, "Who are you?"
I loved her singing.
Thank you, Carol.
And I brought her on the radio.
You did.
And she said, "I think I like this," and started playing.
Love KMUN.
Yeah. And it's this is the way the arts also brings people together and mm-hmm. heals people. And so this festival, again, May 1st through 3rd, do you have various venues or are you doing it in one
yes,
place?
Yes, we do. We've got a website, and my friend Connie, who's here today, will also yes. talk about that. Mm-hmm. It's called North Coast Folk Festival, and if you type it in and even put Astoria, it'll just come right up.
Oh, good.
It's the schedule for our performers who I've hired will be out February, the first week in February on there. It talks about what we're doing, venues. We've got Winecraft, who's mm-hmm. now owned by new people, mm-hmm. Donna and her husband, Brian. They're great. Mm-hmm. We've got Josh over at the Columbia is going to hold our main concert on Saturday night.
Columbian Theater.
And we will be having Joel Underwood, who's from Olympia, very good musician. We'll be doing the Woody Guthrie story.
Oh, cool.
He's really good. Yeah. Then our other venues are Astor Opera House, mm-hmm. I guess, and Kala.
Astor Street Opera mm-hmm. Company. Kala.
So on Saturday the 2nd, Astor Street and Kala and Winecraft will start music in the at noon, and they will go every 45 minutes. They will have a change. So it's going to be pretty exciting. Ooh. And then that concert is Saturday night, and it's going to be, it's really... I have so many people saying, you did it. We're going to do it. I said, yeah, I did.
And you
it's
did.
It's exciting. It's very exciting. Astoria is a town of festivals these days.
It is.
Didn't always used to be. But we do have in the music world, of course, coming up at the end of February is the Fisher Poets Gathering. Which
yes.
is, incredible. But also we have the Tenor Guitar Gathering. Not just Astoria, this whole area. We have Water Music Society across the river, and we have a jazz festival happening in Seaside. So it's about time the folk music. Now, we've got incredible musicians here. Some of them are programmers even, yes. and it's happening all the time. But bringing them together for a weekend is a lovely idea. So, Connie,
yes.
do you play music? How do you get
sucked
in?
I do not play music, but I love music, especially folk music. And Barb, thanks to Barb, she put together a wonderful board of directors. And so we have a nonprofit.
Yes. Oh, good for you.
501(c). So
and Connie's one of them because her and her husband used to own the East Bank Saloon in Portland,
Portland,
Oregon,
and so
hired me there.
Yes, and I'm a small business advocate, and what I see this festival doing is really helping small businesses in Astoria.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Great.
And so actually we're looking for some sponsorship and some donations mm-hmm. To get this thing going. So we have a great opportunity to go on our website. And you can donate that way, and we'll look for $5, any amount, small, large. And we have levels of sponsorship, and you're welcome to check that out on the website and see if we can't get something going here. So anything you can donate is tax deductible.
So that's great. 501(c).
Yep, absolutely.
We're a nonprofit.
We're a nonprofit, so everything's
right out of the gate.
I did everything right.
Yes, she did. She's been amazing to get this
thing
going.
Well, I have a question. If somebody goes to the website mm-hmm. and they see all these possibilities, because you have different levels of
yes.
sponsorship, mm-hmm. folks, you know how that goes, mm-hmm. and all of it will be well used. I think I heard you say, Barbara Ann, that the musicians are getting paid.
Oh, yes.
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 That's why we need sponsorship.
They are just, you probably know most of all the musicians. We good. Also, another person that helped me a lot was Carla Curtis from Long Beach. She owns North Beach Tavern in Long Beach,
okay.
and she has helped so many musicians here. Mm-hmm. And she's been our board of directors, Ron Craig. We have a great,
it's a great
Dinah.
Board.
Oh, Dinah.
And Dinah.
So I have a good group of people with me.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she hooked up with me because I do a lot of nonprofit
she
work.
Does. Oh,
so I kind of know my way around.
Okay,
so.
Connie, we're going to get you right here at KMUN.
She would be so.
Well, we'll see about that. But now,
and
this is a great opportunity for
Niall
everybody to join us.
And Niall is also one of
Niall,
my,
yes. who's one of our yes. people yeah. here, too. So, so what I was going to say is if they go to the website, which is
great.
North Coast Folk Festival.com.
Yes.
This is for you, Carol.
Yeah, and you can donate right there and get a receipt right away.
Everything's really done great.
Very.
And then they know, when somebody does
By
it,
the way, folks, it wasn't something edible. It's a business card. It's okay.
And so when someone does that, just so you know, you're going to get a receipt right away generated. Yes. And I get notified right away with the person who did it and how much and stuff, and then I contact them right away and say thank you.
Okay. Yes, and any level of sponsorship is really good for business, name recognition and everything
supporting,
that you would get.
Supporting the arts is always good for
Absolutely.
Everybody.
Good for the community
but
and
the
good
other
for everybody.
Thing, I was going to say, if somebody goes there and says, well, you know, I heard him on the radio, but I want to know more. So instead of just pressing the donate button,
yes.
Is there a phone number or something? That
yes,
can call
and me? Our mission statement's on there. There's pictures of me, how to contact me. The schedule beyond. Yeah, there. It's a very good website.
So you can get in touch with Barb and then ask whatever questions you have. The festival is happening May 1st through 3rd, so you've got some time. But bottom line is, getting these things going,
yes,
so that the nerves of the organizers and board are assuaged is very, very helpful. We have I want to read some other things that are going
Go
on.
Ahead.
So I was going to say, if you wanted to noodle in the background,
I can.
Excellent! Let's hear Barb play.
Yeah. Well, no, I got to listen to Carol too.
Yeah. Well, I'm just going to tell folks what's happening. I already told you. Well, the rally in Warrington is just about over now. But do stay tuned to INCO, Indivisible North County, and North Coast, Oregon, sorry. Also, tonight from 8 to 10 at Cala is the Belle Noire, a celebration of dark beauty, of dance. I understand that Saturday is sold out, but you can check online. Tonight at 7, the R.J. Marx Trio at McMenamin and Sandtrap. Saturday is Wynn Alexander. Also, at the Klatskanai Cultural Center, Pipeline Vocal Project is the a cappella queens of Alaska. Is there at the, this is in Klatskanai. And tomorrow, the Columbian Theater at 7, Up on the Mountain, a benefit for Conseil Hispano. The Cannon Beach, 2 o'clock, Northwest Authors Series with Zoe Bossier, Cactus Country Memoir, live and live streamed. So you can check in at the Cannon Beach Library and catch Zoe. Better yet, go to the Cannon Beach Library, 2 p.m. I'm going to have her as a guest in March. Have them as a guest in March because the book sounds fascinating. Scarface is at the Seaside Library, a whole different ballgame, the film. And Sunday, the Fort George has the Blue Flags and Black Grass. It's a bluegrass and freak folk band. That sounds right up our alley. And Women Who Write to Heal and Sleeper Coffee. Again, remember Monday morning, 10 to 12, Seth Titchener with Philosopharian. Go over to Cambium Gallery, 1010 Duane. And Columbia River Maritime Museum from the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commissions at 11 a.m. And Wednesday, Rain Magazine kickoff at Winecraft. I'm out of time, folks. And thanks for being here with us. And thanks to my guests, Barbara Ann Gaitosh, Oregon folk singer, and Connie Hunt, board member for the North Coast Folk Festival. Stay active, stay kind, and make a difference. This is KMUN Astoria, KTCB Tillamook, KMUN.org.
Support for KMUN programming comes in part from the historic Liberty Theater in Astoria. From live shows to special events, it happens at the Liberty. For more information, visit libertyastoria.org.